on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, October 12th edition of InvestTalk. And we are getting into the last part of the year. We're in the last quarter now, and it's been an interesting year, a very volatile year. But it also has given investors some opportunities as well. And that is why we are here. We are here to help you expand on your knowledge about the investment world and give you some perspective on how to manage the money you have earned while also protecting it and really making it grow over time. You know, no one's going to make the right decision every time. No one's going to have the right mindset in every market. But your goal is to make your mistakes small and few and far between, and to adjust based on the market that you're in. Now, congratulations to you for taking the time to invest in this learning experience. A lot of people don't do that. It's one stepping stone that will help you become a better than average investor. And remember, your calls, questions, comments keep us on track during this hour. We want to answer your questions, hear what you have to say. That's first and foremost when we are doing the show each and every weekday. And you know, there's a lot of questions, a lot of types, different types of questions from beginner to experienced that we get. And you know, some basic ones are, what are some of the essentials of building a solid platform for your retirement? Now, first on the list is creating a real-life budget. The next item, and we've talked about it, but requires some serious, unhurried consideration, is you need to make the choices that will assure you get the highest possible lifetime benefit from Social Security. That's something you need to think about as well. This one you may need some help with, and it's worth seeking some expert advice to minimize your taxes as well. So if you need a CPA, we have CPAs we work with that can help you out. And you need to take advantage of the retirement tax shelters that you're entitled to. Big businesses do. They spend billions a year on lobbyists to create them and on tax lawyers and accountants to take advantage of them to the maximum possible, of the law. And you should be doing the same. So that's something you have to consider and be a part of your planning each year. Now, your goal is to generate adequate monthly income in retirement, while also keeping away from the excessive risks that are out there. And when I say excessive, excessive isn't the same for everybody. Remember that. Each person has their own risk tolerance and goals. So for what might be good for the goose, not necessarily is good for the gander, right? Now, another item that needs to be managed is healthcare and insurance. So these are all check marks you need to have checked on when you're going down your retirement checklist. Something we do, what Steve does with clients, right? With KP Financial, we sit down, talk to our clients and say, what are you doing for this? What are you doing for that? Are you making sure that you have all the boxes checked? Now, there's more on the to-do list than just that, but that's a good starting point and that might keep us busy for this hour. So if you have questions about any of that, let's talk about it. You know, real estate can be folded into there as well as a way to get more income, hedge against inflation, tap into that resource in retirement, things like that. So that's something that we can discuss as well. I am a licensed real estate agent, so we can get to that. Now, here on Invest Talk, we try to answer your questions with our 24-hour listener line, or you can talk to us live Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now on Invest Talk.
Hi, Steve. My name is Rob. I'm calling from Atlanta. And I have a general question about purchasing a stock once it hit the support level. For example, on Facebook, I know the support level is at around maybe $89. So let's say if Facebook hits $89, would you buy the stock once it hit the support level and start going up? Or would you buy the stock once it hit the support level, start going up, and then wait for a pullback to buy? Thank you so much, and I'm listening on the podcast.
All right, well, I think the big question is, how much patience should you have when hitting support level? That, I think that's really the question he's wanting answered. And the answer really is, you buy it at that support level, whatever that support level is, whether it's moving average, whether it's whether it's previous pivot point, previous consolidation area, previous breakout area. These are all aspects of support and resistance. And if you're an InvestTalk insider, you'll see our chart lessons, and you'll get a sense of what those are. But really, if you are looking to buy a stock at support, you just buy it at support, and then you have a stop. And usually that stop is whatever that day's low is. So whenever it gets to that support level, a good stop usually is, what was the low of that day? And if it closed below that day, then you get out. Because a lot of times you might hit support and it will turn around right on support like it should and rally very quickly, and you won't really get a lot of time to get in. Now, that's a little bit riskier of a strategy, because sometimes support levels get blown through. But if it's a real support level, a good support level, then it should hold. 9 times out of 10, it will hold. So that's why you buy it there. Now, one thing you have to understand about support levels is the more times a certain support level gets hit, the less times it becomes support, or the less strength of that support is. Meaning, on support or resistance, if it goes to that level, backs off a little bit, goes back to it again, the more times it hits that level, the less strong that support is, or less strong that resistance is on the upside. So be aware of that as well. So good question about support and resistance. A little bit depends on your strategy, but I always buy right at support when I am confident that it's there. Now, do you know what your 401k plan uses target-dated funds? Do you know that, if they use target-dated funds? And is it good? Are target-dated funds all they're cracked up to be? What are the benefits and drawbacks? We're going to get to that on Invest Talk today, but I also have some other topics that I want to touch on. One are bad money habits. What are some money habits that a lot of people have that prevent them from getting ahead? I think that's a good way to put it. Preventing them from getting ahead. And then, how to beat an efficient market. This is a study from Morningstar. Study that Morningstar did. And this is the preliminary results of their research, shall we say. And it has some interesting takeaways. So we're going to get to that, and then hopefully you can build that into your investment philosophy so that you can have better than average returns. I also want to get to a Goldman report, Goldman Sachs. Not usually a huge fan of their reports, but I like it, this one, because it's very broad sweeping. It looks at debt and economies broadly. And what area of the world has had the biggest debt buildup of late. And what does that mean? And where does it rank in context to history? And what is usually the aftermath of debt buildups in particular countries? So I'll get to that. And then if I have time, I want to talk about bank earnings. Interesting note on bank earnings and what to look for coming up in this quarter. Now, I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein, and I want to hear your questions and your comments today. InvestTalk is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Our firm serves clients all across the country in almost every state. And if you'd like to see descriptions of our investment programs, just go to investtalk.com, click on the investment tab. You'll see things like our balanced income program, steady yield for those who can't tolerate too much risk. Take a look.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. It's Henning from Ukraine. Hope you're well, and thank you for a great show listening to you on the podcast. My stock today is Alaska Air Group, ticker symbol ALK. I was wondering if you could elaborate on the future of the airline industry. This company has got no net debt and is paying a dividend. And what do you think, taking everything into account regarding cyclicality and growth trajectory, and of course, a price target would be very nice. Thank you very much. Listening to you on the podcast. Great show as always. Bye-bye.
All right, he's looking at Alaska Airlines Group, one of the bigger airlines. Actually, no, it's be one of the smaller airlines out there now with all the industry consolidation. And that's really what's been driving the whole airline sector. It's been a lot of consolidation. And with consolidation of any industry usually comes less competition. And therefore, margins tend to go up. And you've actually seen a pretty big increase in margins across the industry ever since really 2011. Back in 2011, gross margins for Alaska Airlines were 59%. Now they're up to 65%, which is about where they were before the financial crisis. And if you look at net margins, they're at 13.3%, and that's the highest they've been. My data only goes back to 2005. But I can't imagine they were much higher before. So really, their margins are at an all-time high. And there's been, I think, a lot of collusion. There's even been some talk by regulators, Congress, about airlines colluding on prices. And I firmly believe they are to keep prices high. Now, that doesn't mean that necessarily in the short term it's going to go down. And I think the momentum of the stock looks fine. The chart looks okay. But my worry is the industry as a whole. History of airlines is that they go boom and bust. Meaning, what happens is you have boom times like this, and then all of a sudden, new entrants come in because they see those margins, those large margins. And that pushes up competition. Right, you're having a period where competition is being decreased, and it's going to turn. And I think it's probably going to turn relatively soon. And also, if the economy continues to weaken, airlines are not going to do so well. So I think in the short term, I'm kind of neutral to slightly positive on them, because I think that whole collusion activity will keep margins pretty strong in the short term. But long term, I'm not a fan of Alaska Airlines or really many of the airlines at all. So I would stay away long term, but run with it in the short term. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein. Our number to join us right now is 888-99-CHART. I'd love to talk with you. This is Invest Talk.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, president. Why not make use of KPP Financial's free service to Invest Talk listeners? Sign up for a virtual meeting with Steve on Skype or telephone. He can help you review your retirement accounts and make suggestions if you'd like. Appointments are made on a first-come, first-served basis. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting.
Let's talk with Henry in San Jose. How are you doing, Henry?
Pretty good. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
Question. Right now, I invest in mostly index fund.
Okay.
And whenever index go up, I make money. If index go down, I lose money. Mm-hmm. But my buddy told me it's better if I sell a call against my fund. So in case of the market going down, I would collect the premium and annual return would be a little bit higher. Uh-huh. What do you think about that?
Well, that's called a covered call strategy. So, for example, if you're talking about index funds, so say you own SPY, which is the S&P 500 ETF, you owned 100 shares. You can sell one call, which is represent 100 shares, higher than where it is today, and you'll get some sort of premium for that, whatever the market may bear. And if it goes through that, well, then you're going to have to sell, at expiration, you're going to have to sell the shares that you own to them, but obviously it's a higher price, so you're making a profit. But if it goes down, you get to keep that call, that premium that you're getting by selling that call. And that's called a covered call strategy, and there's nothing wrong with that. Certainly nothing wrong with that. The biggest issue is that if the market goes down a lot, right, well, the premium that you're getting from that call might not be enough really to write home about if the market goes down substantially, right? So, but if the market only goes down a little bit, that could certainly buffer a lot of your losses. However, if the market breaks out and rallies, then it's obviously going to limit your upside potential as well, which in this market, I wouldn't be too worried about that. But there's nothing wrong with that type of strategy at all.
And you think it's a good way to do it from your personal opinion?
Yeah, it depends on everyone's risk tolerance. Like I said, if you are able to handle a bear market, for example, say we went into a bear market and the S&P dropped 40%, which is certainly possible, right? Your call selling is probably, depending how you strategize it, is probably only going to net you 5%, maybe 10 if you're really good at it. Okay? So you still could have substantial losses. So don't think that it's definitely going to buffer or stop any downside that you might have. It will slow it or reduce it to a degree. But don't think it's the holy grail either. So it's certainly a good strategy. Absolutely. I'm not going to bash it at all. But know what you're getting into and also know how to execute it. If you have a small number of shares, remember, you can only do it 100 share increments. So if you only have 5 shares, you can't really use that strategy. You have to have round 100 lots to really sell calls against. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, thank you so much.
No problem, Henry. Thanks for calling. Great question about covered call strategy. It's something that not a lot of people are aware of, but it's also not the simplest thing to execute because you have to really understand how options are, how options trade, expiration dates, etc. That really go into playing that kind of game. But it's a good strategy if you have experience, know how to make it happen. Let's talk a little bit about target-dated funds. A lot of people have 401ks out there, and if you're enrolled in a 401k plan at work and put your contributions in a target-dated fund, you might wonder if it's the best option for you. And the really answer is it might be better than you kind of doing on your own because studies show that individual investors make poor decisions. They buy high, they sell low, which is one of the reasons why we do what we do here is we try to make sure investors don't do that. They don't chase. They don't panic in and out of the market. And what targeted funds do is they try to eliminate that emotion, and they certainly have their benefits. But is it the best way to look at how to invest your 401k? Now, about 41% of 401k participants held a targeted fund in their account by the end of 2013. And that has only been growing, really. And increasingly, the qualified default investment alternative in a plan are targeted funds. So based on your age, it's going to put you in X targeted fund. Now, at the end of 2013, 71% of 401k plans had target-dated funds in their lineup. And 15% of all assets in 401k plans were in target-dated funds. And that is only growing, so you can see how popular they are. Now, the issue comes, the biggest shortcoming really, is that it doesn't talk about risk tolerance. Really, targeted funds are generally based on risk capacity, based on how old you are and how many years until the investor needs money, the 401k investor needs money. But two 25-year-olds don't usually have the same risk tolerance. They may have the same risk capacity, but they don't have the same risk tolerance. And that's why they're not great tools. That's really the number one drawback. And we think that risk capacity is far more important, because risk capacity is what causes people to make rash investment decisions, because they took too much risk beyond their capacity to take that risk. So let's talk about that a little bit more if you want to. Now, this is Invest Talk. We've reached the halfway mark in the hour, and there's still plenty of time to join in the discussion. We want to hear from you. This is Invest Talk.
This is Invest Talk for Monday, October 12th, and we're open to any money question. How do you build a portfolio that offers bear market protection? Bring your question to Justin right now. His line is open at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about 25 minutes left in the show. It's going to go by quicker than you think, though. So if you have a question, give us a call. Let's take a quick look at today's market. The S&P was up a whopping 2.5 points. The Dow was up 47 points. The NASDAQ was up 8. So very modest up day after a strong rally from the lows after the jobs report. The jobs report really was poor, but the market rallied on it. The market liked it. So that was kind of interesting. And that has shown some life. It has improved a lot of things technically in the market, but it hasn't solved all the issues. So I think where we end the month is going to be very important. If we end above 2,000 on the S&P, I think that bodes well for a continued rally through the end of the year. However, if we don't and we retrace most or all of this recent move over the past couple weeks, I think that's what's going to that would worry me a lot more. And then the credit markets. Credit markets have gotten better, but they still have a lot of work to do. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Let's go to Jeff in Murrieta. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, Justin, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Got a quick question regarding reverse mortgages. I've moved from the OC down here to Riverside because I took a financial hit on my job last year. So I was able to cash out down here and reduce my overhead. But anyway, as I'm 61 now, if I take another hit career-wise, I might have to take early Social Security, you know, possibly next year, unless I can extend that out, you know, year after year, ideally to age 70. But if I needed to finance the reverse mortgage out of my home, and I got about $40,000 in 401k, if I can't maximize that, then I was thinking maybe I can subsidize myself with reverse mortgage, 401k, to get me to age 70 to maximize Social Security.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad strategy, especially if the costs of financing that until 70 aren't that high. The biggest issue I see is that reverse mortgages are expensive.
Right.
On a fee basis, and then you're really stuck in that home, you know. So if you want to move, you're gonna have to pay all that money back, which you would on a second as well. But I think a second might be, to me, would be my first option. Why? Because they're usually cheaper than a reverse mortgage. But, you know, you have to look at all the numbers. You know, how much can you get on a second? How much can you get in reverse mortgage? What are the fees? What are the interest rates? So I would certainly have that as an option. But I think the simpler and probably lower cost option would be taking out a second mortgage or a HELOC.
Yeah, I would just have the monthly payment. I mean, I know you can do, like, interest only.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those are fixed for 7 or 10 years. Then they'll, you know, adjust after that for 20, whatever the rate might be.
Yeah.
This is just kind of like a worst-case scenario. Ideally, I want to keep on working, you know, for the next 9 years going forward,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll be in a better position. But if I take another hit,
yeah, I would do a HELOC first. That would be my first option, and I would probably try to open up that now. Because remember, you don't have to take it, right? You want to have that in place.
Right.
You always want to get credit when you can get it, not when you have to get it, right? So that's why I would start
exactly.
a HELOC now, see what kind of line of credit you can get, hopefully not use any of it unless you desperately have to, but get it now, have that open, and I think that would be a cheaper way to finance yourself through 70 if you needed to.
Yeah. Now, what about on the 401k, you know, I only got about $40,000, I moved part of it into an IRA from Fidelity, and I got some left in the principal group
mm-hmm.
in a, you know, PIMCO total return. So I don't think I can move the needle that much on just that amount. You know, I've got some personal savings for the emergency fund, but unless I go super aggressive, like basically almost, you know, large cap growth stocks,
mm-hmm.
and just let it ride and see what happens the next couple of years, assuming the market doesn't turn down.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I mean, I think the market has a lot of issues, and I wouldn't be taking that type of risk at your in your state, and you know you might need that money, so and now you can take money out of that really tax or penalty free. You'll pay taxes on it, but if you're having some income trouble in the short term, that's actually a really good time to take money out of your 401k, because then you're gonna pay tax on it. It's gonna be income to you, but your tax basis is gonna be, your tax rate is gonna be extremely low because you're not making a lot of money. So I would think about that, and you know, maybe not take all of it, but you know, dipping into that in the short term to bridge the gap until, you know, you can get to that full retirement age at 66, or you know, hopefully all the way to 70 for Social Security, then I would go that route. You know, but you know, when you're making a lot of money and you have high in a high tax bracket, then that's not when you want to dip into the 401k.
Yeah, I've gone from six figures to about a third of that right now as a base, you know, plus commission, and I'm mm-hmm. just trying to rebuild my book of business. But all right, well, I appreciate that. I just wanted to run that by you as a, you know, possible scenario strategy.
Yeah, no problem, Jeff. And if you ever have any other questions, feel free to give us a call. You can give us a call at our office. Send us a note on investtalk.com. We can help you as well.
Right. Okay, good talking with you.
You too. Thanks, Jeff. Have a good one. All right, let's talk a little bit about, on that note, let's talk about some money habits that a lot of people have that are preventing them from getting rich. Now, I'm not saying Jeff is one of those. He obviously had some career problems that maybe gave him some setbacks, but these are more of everyday habits that, whether you have a steady job or not, will put you kind of behind the eight ball. One is saving only what's left over. So that's what a lot of people do. They say they spend throughout the month, and then at the end of the month, when they have whatever they have left over, that's what they put in savings or in, you know, an IRA or whatever. Not a good way to go. You want to set your savings percentage before the beginning of the month. 7-10%, that dollar amount. It should be about 7-10%. If you're behind on it, it should be closer to 15-20%. You know, if you haven't saved enough, it should be probably much higher. But 7-10 is a good baseline. And that's what money you should be putting away automatically every month. Okay? So don't just do it based on what's left over. A lot of people do that. Next is setting and forgetting. Your savings rate should increase throughout your career. When you get a pay raise, well, bump that savings up a little bit. You're really not going to feel it on a day-to-day basis. You're already used to whatever your income is, right, on a regular basis. You're probably still going to get a bump, but just take a little bit of that bump in pay and put it into your 401k. Increase that deferral percentage, 1% or so. Then spending too much on housing. I see this a lot. People stretch to buy a house. Mortgage and rental payments are often the biggest part of a budget. And people spend way too much on it. It should be around the 30% level of your income, your gross income. Okay? So if you make $100,000 a year, you should be spending no more than about $30,000 a year on housing. And that includes principal, interest, taxes, and insurance on a mortgage. And obviously rent or and rental insurance if you're renting. It puts you behind the eight ball. It really does. Because you don't have money to save elsewhere. And you probably have too much home. More home than you can really afford. Then, not taking full advantage of the tax benefits that are available to you, especially at work. Many people, 401k, putting money in your 401k, getting the full company match. There's no reason you shouldn't do the full company match. There's also health savings plans a lot of times, commuter funds that you can use for pre-tax dollars. And then finally, impulse shopping. If you want to make a big purchase, wait a day, sleep on it. Ask yourself, do you really need it that next day? The vast majority of the time is you don't. And you'll save a lot of money by just being content. Be happy with what you have. A lot of people don't realize that. Be happy with what you have. Everyone's always trying to go out and buy these big ticket things and have the biggest house and the nicest car. There's a lot of people in this world that have a lot less than you, I promise you. So overspending on things is really a way to financial ruin. Now, there's more than one reason to become an InvestTalk Insider. In fact, there are dozens of good reasons. One is the library of webinars that we've done over the years, like seeing the cycles and how to recognize and harness the power of market cycles. It's one of them. It's free to join. It's really pretty simple to do. All you have to do is go to investtalk.com and sign up.
KPP Financial offers a whole range of financial services for their clients beyond the management of investment portfolios. And now KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff to help you make the best possible choices when it comes to decisions about your home. And to learn more about all their investment programs, visit investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab.
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is Nick from New York. I'm a podcast listener, and I was wondering if you could give your opinion on Verizon Communications. The symbol is VZ. The price to earnings ratio seems a little high, but this doesn't seem too high, but what worries me is their debt-to-equity ratio, which seems high compared to their competitor, like AT&T. Their current earnings per share is about $2, and it's forecasted to go down. Also, the percent owned by management is about 35%. And the dividends payout isn't that great. So I was wondering if I was missing something that makes Verizon a good option to buy, or should I just stay away from it? I listen to you guys every day. Keep up the good work, and I hope you have a good day. Bye.
Thank you very much. And he's asking about Verizon. We actually own this for our managed account, so we like the company. I do agree with you on the debt, though. It's something we're keeping a very close eye on, and it's caused us to have a shorter stop on Verizon than we probably normally would for a company in the telecommunications space. So I would agree you are looking at some of the right things. However, they have a very strong business. They're still growing their earnings, unlike AT&T. They made some good acquisitions with AOL, I think was a good acquisition. But the issue is that it has created more financial leverage. Now, they should be paying that down. They based on cash flow. They trailing 12 months, they have $8 billion in free cash flow. So they should be able to start dwindling that down or pushing that down. The problem is they pay a dividend, healthy dividend. That's about 92% is their payout ratio. So that's pushing the limits as well. So there are a few things that we do worry us, and that, like I said, why we're keeping a shorter stop on it. But I do like the company overall and its profitability. It's the best in breed, as the best network here in America, the strongest customer loyalty, and I think they have good management. Management owns nothing, actually. I don't know why I said management owns 35%. They don't own. I don't say they own nothing, but in as a percentage of the company, $180 billion company, it's a very small percentage. Because even, you know, $200 million in relation is very, very small. So it doesn't have a significant ownership stake, so that's a little worrisome. But they do have good management. Their management is very, very good, and they've been good stewards of capital generally over the long term. So I like Verizon, but we have a short out on it. Short stop. Yields 5%, and that's a big draw. But if the credit markets turn in a significant way, which they've, you know, been weak recently, that could feed into Verizon's weakness, and that's why we have that tight stop on it. All right. So that was Verizon, VZ. Now let's talk a little bit about a report that Goldman came out with. And they talk about the aftermath of Asia's debt buildup. And what they do is they go back and they've gone back and look at debt consequences, the consequences of large debt increases throughout history, and what have been the ramifications after. Now, China, Japan, Hong Kong, Thailand, Malaysia, and Singapore are all Asian nations that outstripped Goldman's debt buildup threshold in the 5 years ending in 2013. Now, their pace of increasing leverage has slowed somewhat last year, but that's actually kind of a negative sign in the short term. China's buildup in debt ranked in the 97th percentile of all five-year changes in debt to GDP ratio. And when they consider the consequences of debt buildup, what they're talking about is increases in the debt to GDP ratio of more than 30 percentage points in a five-year period. And although that pace has decelerated recently, debt service ratios continue to rise in most of those economies that I talked about. So the big question is, what's the aftermath? And after the break, I'm going to talk about that. What's the aftermath usually after the debt buildup starts to, I guess, deflate? Now, each month, Steve schedules a day or two to visit one of our satellite offices in California, and it'll be in San Jose, November 11th, for a day of one-on-one meetings with listeners. If you'd like to meet with him, go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Current valuations and distribution rates mean long-term investors should take notice. Why closed-end funds during market turmoil? That's our talking point for Tuesday's podcast. So bring your questions and join us then.
Now, quickly, I talked before the break about Goldman's report on debt buildups and how there's been a lot of debt been building up in China, Japan, Hong Kong, Thailand, Malaysia, and Singapore over the past 5 years or so, and it's starting to slow down. And usually what happens in the aftermath of these debt buildups, when the debt stops flowing, or at least stops flowing at a significant pace, there usually is some headaches. And the first is poor real economic outcomes come as follow, as you would expect. And the biggest problem usually is domestic demand. It falls as the local economy takes the hit, while net exports tend to improve over time. And usually that's because of the currency. Currency tends to get weak. Okay? And central banks usually attempt to wake the economy by cutting interest rates by 2 to 3% in the years following the debt buildup. And you saw that here in America. We had a big debt buildup in the early 2000s. right? With the real estate bubble and all the other debt that was out there. And in the face of this economic slowdown, government spending actually is reduced. You would think it would be increased, but it's actually usually reduced. But it slows less than the private sector activity does. Okay, and interest rates tend to fall across the curve because the central banks are pushing it down. And more importantly, the stocks of that country or the indexes in that country tend to underperform the world index, right? Whatever the broad world index does. So you can see this is what the hangover of debt does. It causes major economic problems. We saw that in 2008 with the financial crisis. And the odds are you're probably going to see something similar. How extreme it's going to be in Asia, it's hard to know, but you probably will see something pretty similar. Now let's answer one more question before we're done this hour. 888-99-CHART.
Yes, good afternoon. Ron here from Fremont. Just calling in regards to two of my favorite stocks that I'd like to get your opinion on as far as a six-month outlook and an actual value of these stocks. First one being Cisco Systems, and the second one being AT&T. I'd take that off the air if I could, please. Thank you.
All right, he's looking at Cisco Systems and AT&T. And Cisco manufactures switchers, routers, and other networking communication hardware for businesses and home applications. Yields about 3%. Earnings supposed to grow 4% this year and 7% next. Revenue is growing in the mid-single digits, nothing too extreme. P/E is below 13, but the five-year period is 8 to 15. So I'm not that big a fan. I don't like the lack of growth. It's not expensive, but it's not cheap either. So I'm not in love with Cisco. And then AT&T, real quick, also is a P/E ratio of 13, yields 5.6%, same type of growth, probably even less than that. One thing I don't like about the telecom industry as a whole is increased competition. And I think that's going to drag on. So I would be neutral to slightly negative on both of those. Let's go to Daniel in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Daniel?
Hi, just real quick, I want to ask you about TJ Maxx and Target, just whether you'd be getting into retail such as these now?
I would say probably not. I think while the economy has really been dragged down by the industrial sector and the retail sector has been relatively strong, it is still declining. And if jobs growth starts to wane even more, you're going to see more pressure on retail. I think it all has to do with the market. You know, if the market can get back to the previous highs in the next couple months, yeah, retail will do just fine. But if it rolls over, retail is going to roll over hard because that's where a lot of the bullishness is and where money is still left on the table. And that's where people are going to start pulling money out in greater quantities. So I would not be getting into retail at this point.
Okay. Are you seeing another 20% drop, or are we on the upswing now, do you think?
It's too early to tell. There's been some positive signs, but I'm still weary that this is just a bear market rally. Now, our hour is up. Thank you for being here and spending this time with us. If you have a money topic you'd like to hear us discuss, send me a note. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. And if you have a question you want answered on InvestTalk, call our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein. On behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing.